You are Locked On Hawks, your daily Atlanta Hawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Hello, friends, and welcome to episode 295 of the Locked On Hawks podcast. I am your host, Brad Rowland, and joining me for the first time in quite some time, someone I beg to come on the show on a regular basis, it's Zach Dillard of Fox Sports South. What's up, man?
You have been begging. Tip of the cap to you, sir. First podcast we've had for Hawks in a while, so glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. I had to talk you into it a little bit, but listen, we were talking about this before we started recording. You made it out to the Hawks ribbon cutting today, and I did not, so you are officially a Hawks insider, whereas I am not, so... there's that.
I mean, it truly is a remarkable place, and I know they put enough money into to make this happen, but with the P3 peak performance, I mean, they have chefs, they have gym. I'm not going to like get into the whole pitch from Emery and the Hawks here, but you can see why, and we talk a lot about Hawks University and the development. They've truly made it almost like this basketball oasis to truly immerse yourself into development. And with where this team is at and how bad this roster is on a relative level to the rest of the league, they're going to need it. So I think that it's, you know, getting a look around it today was pretty cool, because they're going to be relying on young players for quite some time, and they need those young players like a John Collins. You're going to need your 19th overall pick to be good, or Torian Prince, like those mid-teen picks to be good until you can get some of these lottery picks in there. So I it was pretty neat, like just looking around the place today. It's definitely somewhere that I would train or like to train if I was a basketball player. And it won't hurt them in free agency either, which has always been a bugaboo for this franchise.
Yeah, it certainly can't hurt, and I think I shared it actually on the Peachtree Hoops Facebook account, but there was a little bit of live video as well from the Hawks that if people want to see a little bit behind the curtain, I would recommend checking that out. I, of course, did not make it, but I'll be there at some point in the very near future. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there. It's pretty cool, and that was sort of the – it's been a very, very dead period for the Hawks. This four-day break in the middle of the season is very strange, but they took advantage of it with the ribbon cutting and all that stuff, so – sort of on topic. You mentioned Collins and Prince. I am contractually obligated to talk about John Collins in every podcast. I'm not sure if you knew that, but let's just start there, because I know my thoughts and feelings are kind of out there. But and it's kind of weird. I've almost become a little bit of the guy telling everybody to slow down a little bit on John Collins. Not that I'm not excited, because he's a lot of fun and he's been very, very good. But where are you at with the Collins experience at this point? Because I think it's sort of universally accepted that he's been one of the better rookies in the league this year. But, you know, what does that kind of mean moving forward? It's kind of an open question, all that fun stuff. And it's a weird situation, as you kind of mentioned, the rest of the roster is not great. So I guess just where are you at in general with John Collins right now through, I guess, you know, exactly 20 games?
As someone who's not necessarily the, you know, diehard NBA expert that, you know, some people that you had on your that could come on there and, you know, all the analytics like Kevin Pelton and people you've had on your podcast before. Like, I think one thing that I gravitate toward more than anything 20 games into the season, because it's such a small sample size. And I think especially with the style of John Collins, the flashy dunks and just how athletic he is, and he jumps off the screen at you, I think it is a little bit easier, to your point, to get caught up in that small sample size. But I find myself gravitating toward what other NBA players are saying and what people around the league are saying. And I go back to, you know, Blake Griffin and DeAndre Jordan saying that he's going to be a beast around this league for quite some time. I think that a lot of times when we get caught up in the numbers and we try and, you know, dig back into their draft profiles and their scouting profiles and their combines and figure out maybe what we missed or how good a player is going to be. But I always think back to, and this is a obscure reference a little bit, but when Russell Westbrook was at UCLA and how he would go over to pick up games and practices, and you know, pros, including Kobe Bryant, were just like, who is this guy? And he jumped off the screen at them, and they immediately gravitated and thought he would be a really good player. Maybe not an MVP, but a really good player. So when I hear like NBA players really hyping him up, I think it makes me feel better about what my eyes are seeing, because I'm seeing a big man that can athletically compete in this league, seems to be one of those players that is in the right spot at the right time all the time, which is why you're always seeing him finishing at the rim, very high, I think 76% within 3 feet this year. So he's a very good finisher at the rim. And I think he has the skill set to eventually develop a shot. I know we haven't seen much of it, especially even lately, that pick and pop game. I think he has the touch to develop a shot outside the 3-point range. Not to say he's ever going to be that Al Horford, five tool player, if you will, just the complete skill set. But I think that we're seeing as good of a player as you could have hoped for at 19 overall.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am too. He's obviously a steal already. I think, with even slightly marginal improvement, and even if there's no improvement at all, which I can't imagine happening, they're already getting value from 19 overall pick. Like if you can get a rotation player there, that's kind of all right. You can ask for. And that was what we said coming in. I mean, it wasn't as if the Hawks were going to be shooting for the star necessarily at number 19 overall. But, with Collins, if you look around that area, the only other guys that were going in that area, or I guess a little bit behind him, that are really popping at this point are, to a little bit of a lesser extent, OG Anunoby with Toronto, and then Kyle Kuzma in LA. And honestly, I think I've always been an Anunoby guy, but I really, really like Collins, and there's absolutely no gripe with that selection at all. That was it's nice to be talking about upside and in real excitement with number 19 overall pick versus like talking about like whether the guy will figure it out, because I think we're all kind of assuming he's going to figure it out. It's just kind of what kind of level that reaches, and that's a much more fun conversation to be having.
Yeah, and he's a rotational player right now in the NBA, and sometimes you get rookies, and even rookies that were in college for a year or two, as he was with two, they aren't there, and we saw that even a little bit last year that either he wasn't ready or Budenholzer wasn't ready to trust him, a four-year player in Torian Prince stepping in and wasn't able to truly be a part, or at least a serious part of a rotation for the Hawks last season. Now this is a worse roster, so it's a little bit easier to break in. There's a little bit more playing time to go around when you don't have Paul Millsap, or you don't have whoever it may be, Tabo Cephalosha, or whether it's on the wing or down low. So there's a little bit more playing time to toy around with, but I think that what we're seeing with Collins is a player that can be on the floor immediately. I don't think he's been nearly as bad defensively as I think I was fearing.
Agreed.
by going through the scouting profiles and what I was expecting in the draft combine. I saw him a couple times with my own eyes at Wake Forest, but you're going through the scouting, Draft Express and everybody, and you kind of had a fear of, okay, he has the athleticism. He can definitely play on the offensive end, and certainly had the counting and the efficiency numbers on that end. But defense is going to be a problem. I think a defense was going to be that big of a problem, as we've seen with Budenholzer and his coaching staff in the past. He wouldn't be getting minutes, and I think he's been a little bit better defensively. The next steps, of course, I think that he's going to, if he's going to hit his ceiling, he's going to be. Need to be a little bit better of a playmaker, a better passer, probably need to put the ball on the floor a little more. Turnover, I think rookie turnovers are what they are. Turnovers are certainly a little bit of an issue for him at the moment, but I think that comes with time too. So look, I have nothing but good things to say about John Collins. It is the, if not the lone bright spot, it is the brightest spot for this team at the moment. And I think Travis Schlink in his front office need to at least be feeling good about their first big move for the future that they made.
Yeah, they've nailed it in a big way. And like, yeah, there's the turnover stuff, the foul stuff. It's all
right.
I mean, there are some concerns, but it's not like, I mean, every rookie, the best rookie in the league has concerns. Ben Simmons' concerns are a little bit more mild, I guess. But the guys in this class, like, you can't pick a guy in the 2017 draft class that doesn't have concerns. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all in on John Collins. It's a lot of fun, and just I personally enjoy myself. That's kind of all it is. I mean, the fact that he's playing this big of a role is probably a little bit due to team, but he's also a better player than Torian Prince was a year ago. I think, which is kind of crazy because Prince was a 4-year guy and was picked in the lottery. I mean, not every draft is the same. But yeah, it's kind of wild to consider that, you know, Collins is already sort of there, and that's a lot of fun. Well, before I ask you about anybody else, I do have to tell the people about the Draft app, and fantasy sports fans, listen up. Did you know that the chances of winning on Draft are 80% better than on those other salary cap-driven fantasy sites? That's why Draft is my favorite fantasy site. No more getting crushed by the pros, and it's not just me. More than 1 million people have downloaded the Draft app already and are playing on it. Play in a real-life NBA draft right now. Be done in under 5 minutes and get paid out the next day. Drafts are filling up every second, so you can join one whenever you want to do that. All new players get a free entry into a real money draft when you make their first deposit on the Draft app. But you have to use the promo code LOHAWKS. That's LOHAWKS. And use that code to get a free entry into a real money draft on the Draft app. It gets even better from there because the Draft app is also offering podcast listeners of this podcast, Locked On Hawks Podcast, a money back guarantee up to $100. So please check that out as well. Please search Draft in your draft store, sorry, in your app store, or go to draft.com and play for free right now with the promo code LOHAWKS. That's LOHAWKS. And check out the Draft app. Zach, I would tell you to do the same thing because Draft app is fun. I've been playing, and we're sort of doing this thing called Draft Wednesday on the Locked On Network, and I've been playing against some folks. It's fun. It's easy, too. So if you like fantasy sports, check it out.
I like drafts.
There you go. Fantasy drafts are the best part. And this is not even part of the live read, but honestly, fantasy sports, like, the best part about the whole thing is the draft. I mean, everybody kind of agrees on that, I think. So it's just like a bunch of drafts in a row. It's fun. Anyway, but also draft John Collins because he's been playing a lot and scoring a lot of points, rebounding the ball a lot. So nice little segue there professionally. The other guy I wanted to ask you about, in a big picture sense, before I have a couple of quick hitters here at the end of what will be not an entirely lengthy podcast because your time is valuable, is Taurean Prince. I actually haven't talked a ton about Taurean recently. I think it's fairly clear the Hawks need him to be good, just because he's one of the few guys on this roster that has that sort of long-term ceiling as a starting caliber player that's still young enough to be projecting, all that stuff. The results this year are mixed in some ways. There's some positives, some negatives. Would you say he exceeded your expectations, sort of met them, maybe even not met them to this point? I know it's sort of a mixed bag with Taurean from his second season.
I think it's a little under expectations for me. I was really hoping that Taurean could develop into that 3-and-D mixture. And I know that probably putting him up against the likes of a Damari Carroll in the past is unfair at this point. But, I mean, his efficiency numbers simply aren't there. The playmaking really isn't there. You have to like what you're seeing from the outside. You know, 43% shooting defensively hasn't necessarily been that reliable lockdown defender. I just have he's 23 years old. I'm not going to come on here and destroy a guy that's still so early in his development, especially in Hawks University. But it's been a little bit underwhelming for me. I think in some ways that the eye test is a little bit better with Taurean. I would say the same for DeAndre Bembry, whose efficiency numbers and everything that you look at really haven't been there, but I still see a little bit of playmaking in Bembry. I think I was just expecting more. Maybe that was an unfair expectation entering the season and what he's surrounded with and really asking him to do a lot in this current system. But I'm a little softer on him than I was heading into the season. I should say a little bit lower on him than I was. I want to see a little bit more of the next 20, 30 games.
Yeah, I think defensively it's been a little bit disappointing for me. I think I was higher, almost certainly higher on his defense than I was his offense as an ultimate upside play. And I still believe that, honestly. I think his offense might be ahead of his defense right now, which is pretty surprising because that's not where I was, at least even a few months ago on Taurean. There have been some flashes offensively that I've been actually really encouraged with, but defensively he's not been the type of Maybe not a full-fledged force, but I thought he would at least be slightly above average guy by now. I'm not sure I see that in him just yet. But, you know, it's important to remember, we talked about it when he was drafted, but there's a learning curve there on the wing, and he played all that zone at Baylor, all that fun stuff. Like, he's had to come a long way. And
right.
I think ideally you see what he can be when he's just having to guard one player and kind of, I think he rises to the occasion when he has a tough matchup. It's really the other times when that question's unanswered for me is like whether he can just fit in the system and do the right thing at the right time and be attentive and all that stuff. You know, the Hawks defense this year has been pretty disappointing on the whole. That's definitely not all Taurean. There are other guys, i.e. Dennis Schroeder, that are bigger problems, I would say, than Taurean Prince defensively. But still, I think I'd like to see a little bit more from him. And he's not, you know, I like Taurean still. I'm still a fan. I think he can be a starter in this league. But he's not that young either. He'll be 24 in March. Like, that's not old. But it's not like this is, as we talked about before, he was a four-year college guy. And you want those guys to come along a little quicker. You know, not trying to bag on him at all, because I think he's not a starter caliber player yet on a good team. He's already a rotation guy, so that's fine. I mean, if this is kind of the same thing, if this is all he is at number 12, it's a little bit less appetizing, but at the end of the lottery, if you get a rotation guy, it's not the worst thing in the world. I think he'll be better than that, but the jury's a little bit more out than I would have thought. I'm kind of with you on that.
I would say this, I don't think he's ever going to be the player that's going to fill up the scoring sheet by any means. I think he's an off-ball player that at his best is going to punish defenses that sag off. So he's going to need playmakers around him. I will say this. I think that Taurean is at his best, and to be as low on him at this juncture, but he's coming off a pretty good stretch. I like when I look at a box score for him or when I walk out of a game and it's like, he did a little bit of everything. I think back to when absolutely everybody played well in that Sacramento game, but yeah. 14 points, 5 rebounds, 8 assists, 1 block, 4 steals. He followed that up the next night against Boston, 14 points, 5 rebounds, 3 assists. The next night, 18 points, 8 rebounds. I like when I see Taurean Prince get a little bit of everything, some blocks, some steals, some assists, and just being active and involved. I think that, and again, this comparison comes up quite a bit with him, but I think that's what I always thought of as that ideal off-ball 3-and-D guy in Budenholzer's system is Damari Carroll, and how he would just he made good cuts, or he would just find the right place to be open for Jeff Teague or Al Horford for a kickout, or just made the right, you know, a help side defense block. I think if Taurean can just be that, instead of you walk out of a game with 10 points, 2 rebounds, it's just going to be quiet. I need him to be as loud as possible, if that makes any sense, when he's on the court.
It does. And, you know, the 43% three-point shooting is unsustainable, I think. But it's an encouraging sign that he's knocked down some shots. You know, I'm interested to see kind of where that settles a little bit more long-term, because last year he didn't really have that. And he's taking more threes, which is good. That's what I want him to do. And offensively, there's actually been a little bit more creation than I would have projected. But just being aware and being smart and learning. And listen, for as much as I talked about his age, he's still a second-year NBA guy who has 20, you know, 79 games in his entire career under his belt. Yeah, there's a lot to learn there for Taurean, but he's not been awful. I just think it's worth talking about, because he's the type of perfect guy right now that doesn't get talked about a ton, because you have Schroeder, who's the leading scorer. You have Collins, who's obviously the most intriguing guy on the roster. Even you have Bazemore, people are frustrated by with the contract and all that fun stuff. And even there's better storylines with guys like Majet and Kavanaugh, and like Prince is kind of weirdly not talked about a ton, even though I would argue he's still the second best asset on the roster in terms of a long-term play behind Collins. It's a weird setup for Taurean, but you know, it's all that to say, it's not like the sky is falling or anything, but it's just,
no, not at all.
Definitely worth discussing.
I mean with this roster, I mean, the sky isn't falling on almost any of the young pieces. They have time to grow, they have time to develop. You know, it losing is the worst if you're a Budenholzer and this coaching staff and all these players, but at the end of the day, like, this roster probably isn't going anywhere, so you have time to get better.
They all hate it, but it's actually, I was actually talking about this with somebody offline today, but it's kind of weird if you look at the roster this season, knowing that they're 4-16, there really aren't a ton of guys who I would say are performing meaningfully worse than I would have thought. There are guys you could sort of pick nits and say maybe they're playing a little bit less than what you thought, but there's really only, I think Ilyasova is the only guy on the roster that I can look at and say he's been meaningfully worse than I would have projected, and they're still 4-16. So it's kind of rough, because like, we kind of knew this was coming and talked about it a lot, but it's not anything that you could just point to and say, well, that guy's struggling, that's going to get better. I'm not sure. I mean, there's a couple of these guys I assume will play a little bit better. Prince might be one of them. You know, maybe Schroeder's defense. There's other things you can look at, but like, there's not really anything to just circle and say, "Yep, that's going to improve for this." I'm talking about for this year only. In the future, it's all different. But the frustration's probably going to continue. Unfortunately, I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you're, especially if you're Dwayne Dedmon, you have to feel pretty good about what you've done on the court. You know, Bazemore, again, you go back to the contract, is still going to be a bit of a sore spot for this fan base or this roster.
Sure.
But he's probably been a little bit better than he was last year. I don't know what else you could have wanted out of Bellinelli and again, as you mentioned, like these young guys, it's just going to take time. Like if you're not seeing it, Collins or Prince or Bembry or Dorsey in his 46 minutes played, like that's just because that is going to take time. I think one other guy that I would throw in there that maybe I was hoping would be a little bit better in a, if not a bigger role, it's the same role he was in last year. Malcolm Delaney hasn't quite been up to as good as he was last year, maybe.
It's certain. I mean, there are things that he's better at this year and things that he's worse at this year, I would argue. Like his jump shot's been better. He's shooting 37% from three after he really struggled last year. But I would agree that maybe his overall impact has not been quite as sharp. And there was a little stretch when he's playing off the ball a little bit with Taylor and Schroeder. But yeah, I thought he probably bounced back a little bit harder than he has, if that makes sense. You know, the shooting is back where I thought it would be all along, at least from three. But efficiency-wise, it's still not really there yet, and defensively, yep, maybe a little bit of a step back.
Yeah, with Delaney, it's one of those things where they took a look. I thought it was a successful flyer on him last year. If they had the optimal depth on a playoff team, he probably would be playing 347 minutes through 20 games. I think he can still be that third point guard in this league, and maybe ask him to be the second point guard. Again, is why they probably are where they are, or one of the just another indication of why they are where they are at the moment. But I mean, I'm not, you know, down on Delaney as far as like I don't think he can compete in this league. But I think I'm right there with you. I look at this roster and most guys are about where you thought they'd be or maybe even a little better. I go back to Dwayne Dedmon. I think he's making himself quite a bit of money if he can continue shooting 48% from the outside with that, with the type of efficiency we've seen from him. Dedmon looks great. I thought they've as best as you can build a rebuilding roster, to put it nicely. Some of the pieces have worked.
Yeah, I mean, Dedmon's not going to shoot this well. I think we all know that. But like the fact that he has a jump shot, it's going to be interesting to see what he does. I think he's going to opt out for sure. If he's playing this well, he's going to opt out, and that'll be an interesting decision.
So I'm saying he's made himself some money, I think.
Yeah, no question about it. Before I let you out here, a couple of quick hitters. I do want to ask you about guys that I think are interesting topics in some ways. One of them is Josh Magette, who I'm now becoming famous for reasons passing understanding. And the other is Tyler Cavanaugh. These guys have been playing a lot. They're the two two-way players for the Hawks. By that token, they have a limited time they could actually be with the Hawks this year, but Magette's been the backup point guard the last two games ahead of Delaney, and Kavanaugh's been playing a lot. I think Kavanaugh can be directly traced, really they both can be directly traced to injuries because Isaiah Taylor is out and the front court's been battered all season long, but still these guys are getting some attention. What do you think about, especially I think Magette, I think because Kavanaugh has been legitimately good in some times, which has been surprising, but he's been playing and really doing some legitimately good things. Magette, maybe not quite as much, but do you think either one of these guys is an actual thing moving forward, or is it just more of a good story that they've been around? Because I lean toward that, especially with Magette, given his age is probably my biggest concern.
Well, the age definitely jumps out. I'm with you on Kavanaugh. I'm not going to say that he's not an NBA player, because I think he's done a lot of good things. He's actually really good on the boards. He has great hands. He's pretty strong. I know he's only 6'8", 6'9", but I haven't disliked Kavanaugh, especially at 23 years old. Now, do I think he's a rotational player in the NBA? No, I think that he'd be more of that two-way contract, 14th or 15th guy on a good roster, but he's at least intriguing. I need to choose my words a little wisely on Magette. At 28 years old, 6'1", and only playing 64 minutes, I think it's been such a small sample size. And when he's on the court, he's asked to do so little. You know, as a point guard, just a usage rate of 10.8, just 11%. The shooting 25% from the outside. I don't, I mean, obviously you look at his numbers and there's a reason why his offensive rating is where it is. And he hasn't been a detriment to this roster, but I think it's more of a intriguing and good story on a roster that clearly needed some help. But as far as going off the deep end and saying that Josh Majette's going to be sticking around the NBA for 4, 5, 6 years, I don't see it personally. And, you know, you always have to root for those, you know, dark horse underdog guys. But at 28 years old, it's pretty cool that he broke into the league. I would argue there's a reason that he broke into the league on a roster like this. And the numbers over the course of time, teams are going to probably end up exploiting him. I don't see it, everybody. I don't see it with Josh Majette, and maybe he could prove me wrong. Maybe he just hasn't gotten enough playing time at 64 minutes. I would argue it's the other way around. But the shooting has to be better. And if the Hawks ever asked him to do a little bit more, I think you would see a little bit more of that, where his limitations are as a player. But hey, you know, rookie, a 28-year-old rookie, it's kind of a cool story.
Yeah, it's a very cool story. That's the thing. I know I've turned into public enemy number one.
I tried to be as non-offensive there as possible. Listen, I just personally don't see it, and I know that's where you stand too, but you know, people are wrong about these things all the time, but I have a hard time seeing where the upside is, or where in the grand scheme of things, if you projected him out, like maybe he could be a second point guard and playing whatever it is, 20 minutes a night. I just see the limitations there would start to be exploited.
Yeah, I mean, it's important. I think it's good that you pointed out how good of a story it is, because it really is an awesome story. This is a guy who played D2 basketball, who is tiny. I think he's probably generously listed at 6'1". But yeah, it's one of those things where I've become public enemy number one by saying that he's not an NBA player. I still believe that. I understand that he is playing in the NBA, and people take that definition quite literally and want to get really upset with me about him playing on NBA roster. I get it. But yeah, I'm with you 100% on all this. I think it's important to point out that while he's not a non-shooter, he's a 35% three-point shooter over 4+ seasons in the G League. It's not like he's this knockdown 45% three-point shooter. And to be as small as he is, there's no question he's a great passer. Like, he sees the floor really well. He operates an offense really well. But when you talk about the shooting not being there necessarily, and the defense is never going to be a thing, like, he tries very hard, and he knows where to be. Like, there are guys who are worse than him, I would probably say. But if you really focused on him, as you said, if people get more tape on him and see him out there and focus on him defensively, he can be exploited pretty easily. So it's a great story. There's no question about that. Actually, put the bat signal out to Jeff Siegel to write something that's going to be going out, as people listen to this, probably this morning on Thursday. I mean, sorry, on Wednesday, to sort of break down Majette a little bit in this way, because I think people are getting excited, and I hear from fans all the time about how excited they are about Josh Majette. I understand. It's a very cool story. You and I are trying to be diplomatic here to a certain extent. The ship has sailed with me, I know, so I'm sorry if people will get in your mentions about this because I prompted you on it, but yeah, I just want to be as frank as, I mean, I have to give my analysis. That's the thing. I've gotten a lot of "you never played the game, bro" quotes about my analysis on Josh Majette.
So, yikes.
Yeah, it's been a lot of that, which is, I get it. Like, he's a professional basketball player, and that's a good thing. And by the way, I'll say it again. I've said this probably 100 times. I'm totally on board with the Hawks paying him the two-way contract because he's an awesome G League point guard. And he has obviously provided some value as an emergency fourth guy, and that was totally fine. I have no problem with it at all. I just don't think he's this guy that people have to, like, I think people really think now that he's an NBA backup point guard, and I don't see that.
Yeah, I don't see that. I think he does provide that semblance of stability on a team that is incredibly non-stable.
Yeah, non-stable is a good word.
So there is that. I think the fact that he certainly could pass as Mike Budenholzer's son.
I've heard that a few times, which is always fun to talk about, but it's absolutely true, by the way.
it is absolutely true. I don't think that hurts his cause at all. In fact, I think Bud's son was constantly at the arena all the time. When still he grows up, I think he's going to look like Josh Majette. When he gets older, I think we're just working in some sort of Back to the Future scenario here. But no, I think it's a great story, and it's one of those stories that only pops up on, you know, 5-6 win teams, and, you know, teams that are going to be in the lottery. That's not a bad thing, but I would argue it, you know, there's a reason why a 28-year-old, 6'1", not a knockdown shooter, is just breaking into the league. It's a great story, but we'll see where it's at. I would say this. I kind of wish at times, or if I was running the front office, I would think that I would at least want to be exploring a higher upside option. I know one guy that came available, and there's all sorts of stories, and I know he's had an injury. He's on a two-way contract with the Trailblazers right now, but a player like Wade Baldwin, or somebody that's has fallen out but still has that first-round upside, and there's a reason with the athleticism or whatever it may be, maybe you could be using that roster spot in another way, but, you know, that's not to take anything away from Josh Majette. It's more of just what I would be looking at if I were, you know, in the midst of this rebuild.
Yeah, the Hawks clearly use those two ways sort of functionally and practically, which I understand to an extent. I would have gone for more upside too in general, but I had no problem with it. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think if you're trying to find a guy who's going to be a long-term NBA player from the Kavanaugh-Majette duo, it's going to be Kavanaugh. Part of that is age, and part of that is that he's just honestly just been better. I mean, Majette's a better story because he's a guy who played D2, and you know, Kavanaugh was actually like a major college basketball player who's a legit 6'9 and has some tools. I don't think he is a rotation guy either, as you kind of mentioned there in passing, but I do think that Kavanaugh, you can see it more. There are less things to be exploited there. You know, I wish he was 2 inches taller or 3 inches taller and could be like a real live NBA center size kind of player, whereas right now he's more of a
because core. He plays like that.
Yeah, he's more of a he's a center that happens to be 6'9 and not that athletic. Which is, I mean, if Kavanaugh was 7 feet tall, had the same skill set, I think he actually would be an NBA rotation player potentially. But that's a story for a lot of guys, yeah, right? But he wouldn't have been.
Yeah, he probably would have been drafted. I will say this: as a shorter person, I'm rooting for Josh Majette. Go, you know, short. You know,
you are. He's taller than you. I will give that analysis right now. He is certainly taller than you, Zach Dillard.
Well, you know. I don't wear my NBA shoes to.
Oh, that's true. You haven't been measured
to the media rooms. So yeah, I need my measurement shoes.
let's just end there. That's a perfect spot to do it. Anything you got going that you want to pump, please do. Even if it's not Hawks, because I know you guys at Fox Sports do more than Hawks, and you're very, very busy over there.
No. I will say this. Our Hawks Twitter account, if anybody's listening, go on there. It's at Hawkson, FSSE. Plenty of good stuff. And one of the reasons for that, our man KL has been helping us run that this year. So if anybody doesn't follow either of those accounts, go over there because both of them are great.
Absolutely, and I would encourage people to do that because a lot of times, especially on the road, it's very valuable to me, like just to see there's some stuff in there, even post game interviews if people like those, and they might miss them on TV. Good analysis from Kale, who is a good friend of you and I. Follow those accounts, check them out. Follow Zach's work in general. If you happen to like the Braves, Zach hosts a TV show, which is something. It's not on right now necessarily, but it's coming back.
It's not on right now. We're heading up to winter meetings next week, and we'll see what happens there. But for now, it's all Hawks all the time for me, Brad.
I don't believe you at all, but I appreciate that on this Hawks podcast that you saying that. And you do lots of stuff, so check all that stuff out for Zach. Well, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for coming on as always.
Thanks for having me. See you.
As for everybody else, please stay tuned. I might skip tomorrow. We'll see how that looks, but we'll definitely have a wrap-up show to be sure when it comes to Thursday's game against LeBron James, who happened to be ejected tonight, so he might be a little bit upset when he arrives at Phillips Arena on Thursday, which is bad news for the Hawks. But stay tuned for that, and we'll wrap things up, and we'll be back again later in the week.